Yes, so thank you very much to the organizers for the invitation to speak here. I'm really happy to be part of Bill's birthday celebration. I'm going to be talking a little bit about cells, rings of cells with delayed coupling. I have sort of two little case studies. I want to look at different problems that I've studied, and it turns out there's a lot of similarities that have appeared, so I want to sort of mention those. And just before I start, let me mention my collaborators on this. So the first one is a sort of study of Hopfield-type networks, and this has been kind of a few projects along the way. It really started off with a master student of mine a few years ago, Leslie Scheer, quite a few years ago, who did a study of a system of two elements. And then more recently, John Han Wu and Israel Inuba and I looked at a system with three elements. And then a postdoc of mine, Yuan Yuan, looked at sort of generalizing this to the n-dimensional case. And she's very efficient. She actually only stayed with me for 2 months before she got a job, but she still did quite a bit, and we've actually got that collaboration going quite nicely. And then the second problem is one that I worked on with Pauline van den Driessen and Rod Edwards. And just the support for these projects came from NSERC and MITx. Okay. So, all right. A little bit of motivation for it. So the motivation for these studies is really looking at these, there's a lot of physiological systems where you have rings of similar neurons, and there's sort of some sort of fundamental properties of these networks. One is the ability to synchronize, important to have all, for the neurons to be able to do the same thing. The other is the ability to respond to different inputs in different ways, so the idea of existence of multiple stable solutions. And the other sort of fundamental modeling issue is that you can model the coupling with time delays because of the times of propagation of signals along the axons or other issues. So what we wanted to do was look at some simple models that can exhibit these kinds of properties. This is sort of preliminary. They're not, I'll tell you right now, not really biologically, the models for the neurons aren't very biologically relevant at this point, but it was more question of looking at fundamental ideas and what kinds of properties you can get. Okay, so the first problem was this, what I call a Hopfield type N ring. Some people object to the name Hopfield, so I try to avoid it. Very simple model, okay? This is the basic setup. So I have, this is the sort of fundamental picture. So I have these identical elements or cells in a ring. They have nearest neighbor coupling with delay. So B I'll call the coupling strength and T the coupling time delay. And then each little element is just modeled by one delay differential equation. So there's a linear decay. And then there's a nonlinear time-delayed feedback. Okay, so that's just some. So the D, which is your decay, is going to be positive. I want that to be a decay there. The time delays are non-negative. And the A's and the B's could be positive or negative, depending on whether you want inhibitory or excitatory coupling. The kinds of nonlinearities typically looked at in these problems, something like this, sigmoidal type, in particular, the H of 0 is 0, so that's just going to mean I have always have the trivial solution for my equations, and at least some kind of normalization, so H prime of 0 is 1. So the A's and the B's really represent some kind of strength of these feedback or coupling. So a typical example, people use a hyperbolic tangent, and that's what I'll use in my simulations and anywhere where I need the actual nonlinearity. All right, so I want to convince you that you can think of this as really a system of coupled oscillators. Okay, so if you look at the single element, so just take one element out of the network, as I mentioned, you have a linear decay and then you have this nonlinear delayed feedback term. There's, if you look, this is a sort of straightforward scalar delay differential equation that's been well studied, and there's basically three possible steady state behaviors. The trivial solution is stable in certain ranges of parameters. You can get a non-trivial fixed point in other ranges of the parameters, or you can have an oscillation about zero. So essentially, this is saying in this situation, the linear decay dominates when you get, so you get a trivial, the trivial solution in this case. And if you have negative feedback with a strong enough, that's strong enough, you can get what's called a delay-induced top bifurcation. So when the feedback's strong enough and negative, and the time delay is big enough, you get a Hopf bifurcation, and you can get oscillations. Okay. These are the two parameter ranges that'll be most relevant to the problems I'm looking at. So the idea is to take these little elements. So this is a kind of nice system. You have a scalar equation that can oscillate or not. So you can think of it as a little oscillator. Now we're going to couple them together in a symmetric ring with nearest neighbor coupling, and there'll be delays in the coupling as well. Okay, so let me just put up this equation. So as I mentioned, with the assumption on H, we'll always have the trivial solution always exists. So what I want to just focus in on for this talk is the kinds of bifurcations that can occur and the kinds of oscillatory patterns that you can see. And in particular, we're interested in coexistence of multiple stable patterns and how that can occur. So if you look at linearized around the trivial solution, you can find the characteristic equation, which will help you study the stability of the trivial solution and also bifurcations from the trivial solution. Okay, so you can do, again, because you have some symmetry here, you can just work out exactly what the characteristic equation is going to look like. There's two sort of situations, depending on whether the ring has an even number of elements or an odd number of elements. Your characteristic equation breaks up into these little linear factors, linear in lambda. So these delta of lambda here are quasi-polynomials. So they're polynomial terms in lambda and exponential terms in lambda coming from the Dirac delay. So this is just the usual, we linearize and we look for solutions of the form e to the lambda t to study the solution, the stability of our trivial solution. So you get these terms that are just simple terms, and then you get these quadratic terms. And of course, the quadratic terms just come from the symmetries that you have in the system. So what can you say about if you look at the corresponding sort of solutions or bifurcations? So roots of this delta zero, if you look at the corresponding solutions to those roots, when you think of your linear equation, then those give you synchronous solutions or in-phase solutions. So all the elements are doing exactly the same thing. So correspondingly, if you have a root of delta zero with zero real parts, or a pair of roots, a pair of pure imaginary roots, that's going to correspond to some kind of bifurcation, or under appropriate conditions on the nonlinearities, and that's going to be a bifurcation that gives you a bifurcation to non-trivial synchronous solutions. So obviously the trivial solution is synchronous, but it's kind of uninteresting. When n is even, then there's also another simple factor, and that or single factor, roots, the solutions corresponding to those are asynchronous solutions, so they're not synchronized, but they're what I would call antiphase. So the you have u1 is equal to minus u2 is equal to minus u3, and so on. So they alternate. So obviously you can only get this in the even case. And then all the other delta j's here and all the other factors, which are all quadratic, give rise to equivariant bifurcations and give rise to various asynchronous solutions. And depending on, of course, the value of n, you can determine what type of patterns you expect or what kinds of oscillations you expect to come out of those different bifurcations. Okay, and just want to mention, there's work by Junhong Wu, who's here and speaking this afternoon, and Krasiewicz, who did a lot of work on equivariant Hopf bifurcation for functional differential equations, kind of establishing the analogous theory to what we have for ODEs. Okay, so those are the kind of bifurcations you can get. So if we want to understand, what I'm going to do is look at what the bifurcation curves look like, and this will give us a kind of an idea of the role that the different parameters, in particular the network parameters and what I call would think of as the cell parameters. So the network parameters or the coupling parameters are the B and the tau, the delay and the strength in the coupling, And then the internal sort of cell parameters are this linear decay and the strength and the delay and the feedback. So it turns out that a useful way to look at the bifurcations is to write them, think of them in terms of the parameters, the coupling parameters B and tau. I won't write down. You can work out exactly what these bifurcation curves are. I'm just going to give you an example because they're kind of messy. So you have steady state bifurcations. In our case, if you use the hyperbolic tangent, that gives you another Z2 symmetry, so you end up getting a pitchfork bifurcation. So that's fairly straightforward. This is just a synchronous pitchfork, so that corresponds to that delta zero. Straightforward. Then you can get synchronous Hopf bifurcations. So again, you just look at the solutions of those particular factors of the characteristic equation, and all I've done here is tried to determine where in parameter space those occur by solving for two of the parameters in terms of the rest. So you can get these bifurcation curves expressed as a function of omega. Omega is the imaginary part of your eigenvalue at the bifurcation. And of course, it depends on the other parameters D and A as well. So don't worry about too much about the details of expressions, other than the fact that in the expressions for the tau variable here, you have an arctangent. So you're going to have multiple branches of Hopf bifurcation. And this is just comes out of the fact of the form of our characteristic equation with those exponential terms. So this, you always get this with delay equations. When you get these delay-induced Hopf bifurcations, you don't just get one, but you get this whole family. So this is going to be important to kind of see the structure of what goes on. And then, because we have sort of expressions like this, you can say things about the geometry of these curves. So think of them in the B-tau space, but they depend on the internal cell parameters. So what happens is I change those cell parameters. Remember, we had there's different fundamental behavior for the cells depending on what those variables take. And you can describe what I call transitional values of the self-delay. So as I increase the self-delay, there's different values and different kinds of behavior occurs in these bifurcation curves. So I'll just give you an example. To get an idea. So this is when n is equal to 3, and I've just taken some particular value. So this is values of parameters where the cells could oscillate. What happens is if the delay is small enough, the cells aren't oscillating on their own. In this here, this is B and this is tau, and in this region here and here and here, the whole network is silent. You just have the trivial solution. And as you cross these curves, the black curves correspond to the synchronous bifurcations, and the blue corresponds to equivariance. So there's two types for the n is equal to 3. There's basically two factors, a delta 0 and then a repeated factor. So what you can see is as you increase the tau, the curves become, for one thing, non-monotone, and they cross each other, more interesting things occur. And then when you cross the tau value where the cells start oscillating on their own, then you actually don't, here there's no region of stability, so the network, once the cells are oscillating on their own, you connect them together, the whole thing has to be oscillating in some way. So you can't get, when you couple them together, you can't kill the oscillation. So just, so n is equal to 3, and just for comparison, this is n is equal to 6, you just get a few more things occur in that case. So the solid ones are the same as you had in n is equal to 3, and then you just add two more factors. So you've got here these dotted dashed black ones correspond to the antiphase bifurcations. Those are also simple bifurcations. And then you get another kind of equivariant bifurcation. So the only thing I just want to point out here is as you increase this tau s, the self-delay, you get to these situations where you have these different bifurcation curves crossing each other. So you can get interactions of the bifurcation. You have the different bifurcation curves bounding on the stability region, so there's obviously different oscillations that can occur as you leave that stability region. Okay, so sort of the consequences. So the tau S1, that was one of the, that those transitional values of tau, the self-delay, the first one, and that's when the curves become, the bifurcation curves become non-monotone. After that, you can get interesting things happening. You can get bifurcation interactions when n is odd. You can get coexistence of synchronous oscillations when n is even. You can get coexistence of synchronous oscillations and in-phase oscillations and anti-phase oscillations. And then the second transitional value there is when the equivariant half bifurcation curves basically come close enough to the synchronous half bifurcation curves, and then you can get coexistence of synchronous oscillations with multiple asynchronous oscillations. So just some numerical simulations illustrating that. So this is a situation with n is equal to 3, set of parameter values near a hop-hop interaction point between two synchronous hop bifurcations, and what we can get is coexistence. So we have a double hop, and it's the right structure that you can get the coexistence of both stable oscillations. So these are both, here I've got, there's three, blue, green, and black representing the three different elements, but eventually you synchronize the transient and the steady state. And this is a situation, different parameter values, where we have an interaction between a synchronous half bifurcation and an equivariant half bifurcation. For one set of initial conditions, we go to a synchronous oscillation, and then for two other sets of initial conditions here, we go to a phase-locked oscillation. There's two different phase-locked oscillations coming from the D3 equivariant half bifurcation. So those are sort of three different oscillatory patterns that coexist. And then just for the n is equal to 6 case, the set of parameter values where we have an interaction between the synchronous half bifurcation or the in-phase half bifurcation and the anti-phase. So here I've got 6 elements. All right, there's, we start off with 6 different colors here, and either we end up with all the elements doing the same thing, or we end up with 1, 3, 5 in phase with each other, and pi out of phase with 2, 4, 6, which are in phase. So that's the anti-phase solution there. So that's one system. Second one, I won't go into as much detail here. I just want to look at some of the things that we saw in the second system and see some of the similarities. So in this case, this is a problem where we looked at two coupled three rings. You can think of it as very similar to the other problem where now I have my elements are each little three ring, and then I have time-delayed coupling between the two rings. And the coupling actually just goes between one element of the two rings. So my cells now, I'm thinking of, there was different ways to look at this, but I'm thinking of as each cell has got three elements. Very simple now, we just have three ODEs describing our cell. This is the sort of simplest system of ODEs that you can get that will have an oscillation. So I still have an uncoupled system that can oscillate. There's a single parameter. So if you look at, here's the uncoupled system here. It's xj dot is f of xj. There's a linear decay, and then there's a nonlinear nonlinearity, and that setup is just set up so that you can get oscillations. There's one parameter c for the one cell parameter, and if c is large enough negative number, then you can get oscillations in the individual cells. And then we have the same sort of parameters B and tau representing the strength of our feedback and the delay in the strength of the coupling and delay in the coupling. So you still have the same kind of symmetry with the only this is now just like D2. So we have when we do look at our characteristic equation, we have a product of two things here. So it's just like the n is equal to 2 case in the other situation. The only difference is the details in the actual element. Products of the characteristic equation, but the fundamental thing is you have some stuff involving lambda here and lambda, and then we've got our this is essentially the strength of our feedback, and we have this e to the minus lambda tau. So similar in the other case, it's a little more complicated because we had stuff involving the other time delay here, but the same situation. So what you see is if you look at the bifurcation curves in the same type of parameters as we did with the other system, namely the coupling delay and the coupling strength, then you get very similar pictures. So I won't go through all the details, but they're unidirectional links. Yeah, yeah, it's just a feed forward. Okay, so what should I just want you to get out of this is that this looks very similar. What I've drawn here is depicted here again is in the tau d, so d is now my strength, it's a slightly different parameter, strength of the delayed feedback between the two elements. Tau is the delay. And then what I'm varying here is parameter gamma, which is c cubed. And c was the sort of the cell parameter that caused the bifurcation. And you see exactly the same kind of situation when that parameter is small enough. We have, these are our Hopf bifurcation curves. You just have two types of equivariant, or the, sorry, non synchronous and the antiphasing, phasing, antiphase. That's all you get when there's two cells. So you have the, they're monotone, they become non-monotone, you have these interactions, and then eventually you pass the gamma value where the cells are oscillating on their own, and you get to a situation where you have no region of stability for the network. Okay, so in here again, we have this central area where the trivial solution is stable. So we get the same sort of picture qualitatively, obviously the details are different, and the same kinds of situations can occur. So you have, when you get to stages like this, as you vary the time delay, you can go between having antiphase oscillations and in-phase oscillations, and actually here in a point here, near this interaction point, you can get coexistence of antiphase and in-phase oscillations. And this is just a numerical simulation illustrating that. So this is, again, said parameter values near that hop-hop interaction point between the antiphase and the in-phase hop bifurcation. So what I'm, the way I'm illustrating these here is the blue curves correspond to one element and the red to the other. And then what I've done together is I've drawn X1 from the two different cells together. Okay, so this is X1 from one ring and X1 from the other, and this is X2 and X3. So what you see is we have two different initial conditions. In one, the two X1s are doing the same thing, two X2s and two X3s, so we have this synchronous oscillation. And then in the other case, we have antiphase, so X1 and X2 are pi out of, or X1 and the two X1s are pi out of phase, and the two X2s and the two X3s. So we get that same kind of pattern of oscillation as we saw in the n is equal to 6 case before. You get with these even rings with even number of elements. Okay, so I think I'll just finish up. Just sort of gross thing to say. There's these time delays, as I mentioned, can lead to multiple branches of Hopf bifurcation. And if I looked at these two different systems, but if I, they both had this sort of commonality of these coupled elements coupled with time delayed coupling. So if I look at the bifurcation space in the curves in the space of the coupling parameters, what I see is a similarity between the bifurcation sets. And as you vary this parameter, the cell parameter corresponding to bifurcation in the cell, we get the same sort of changes that occur in the bifurcation sets. And in particular, you get the possibility of bifurcation interactions between the multiple branches from sort of a single type of Hopf bifurcation and also between the different types of bifurcations coming from the different, the equivariant or the synchronous or the antisynchronous. And just, I mean, this all comes down to really the structure of the quasi, of the characteristic equation. So essentially, if you get anything where you can have, I mean, take a symmetric system, right, if it's, if you set it up with your cells in such a way and your coupling in such a way that you get your factors, so the symmetry is going to break your thing up into factors, where your factors have this kind of a form, so you have this sort of one term comes with time delay, then essentially you're going to be able to, you're going to get the same kind of pictures, is what I'm trying to say. So I think I'll just leave it there.